as an inner material, or we can see this as a creation of the Lord, or I can see this as meant for my sensual pleasure, or we can see it as Krishna's energy. So depending on my consciousness, I can see the same item in different levels. Just as inert matter, or something meant for my sensual pleasure, or it can be seen as Lord's creation, or above that is to perceive this is the Krishna's energy. So depending on this level, we can see the reality. And if our consciousness, as Parikshit Maharaj is saying here, is illuminated by pure goodness, then it offers a spiritual vision. So if our consciousness is illuminated with pure goodness, then it offers us a spiritual vision. So we can see that everything is connected to the Lord, or everything is connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or Krishna or His energy. That is Vasudeva. So wherein we can see that the Lord is pervading the entire existence. So this is the reality, and this reality can be seen based on our consciousness. So how we perceive. So somebody is in mode of ignorance, he looks at the same item or matter from a different perspective. But someone who is on pure goodness, he sees everywhere the Lord's energy, or he can see the Lord in his expansion in the universe. So therefore, someone who is in a lower mode, he thinks it as Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi. This is meant for my sensual pleasure. And the moment somebody thinks that this is for my sensual pleasure, what happens? The person becomes bound by the material energy. Which is the person's thoughts about that? Bhagavad Gita 13.22. So therefore you say that the moment I perceive this material energy is meant for my sensual pleasure, I'm bound by it, I become entangled. But when I see it as Krishna's energy, then the same material energy, it can be taken as Vishram Purna Sukhayate, that I can remain happy even while remaining in the material world. Because I don't see it as for mine, but I see it as Lord's energy. And this is what Narada Mahamuni describes in his pastime in the first canto, where he offers it as a therapeutic value. That is, if I use material energy for my sensual pleasure, then that causes bondage. But when I use the same material energy in Lord's service, then it's purifying. It disentangles me or create detachment from the same material world. So therefore, he uses the word therapeutic, or you can use a therapy. And something similar to this we have in medicine as well. If you look at the homeopathic medicine, they call it a similia similibus curanda. So that which creates a problem, if the same item is given in micro quantity, it provides relief. So if I take, say for example, quinine, when taken in massive doses, it could create that shivering, body pains and so on. But the same quinine is given in micro quantities, then it provides relief from the same fever and shivering. So this is the concept of, this is a therapeutic concept of homeopathic medicine. And similarly, you also have the underlying principle in allopathic medicine, which we call the modern system of medicine, which calls it as contra via, contra res curanda. Homeopathy is similia similibus curanda, whereas allopathy is contra via, contra res curanda. That means opposites are cured by opposites. So therefore the simple phenomena is, well, here is a bacteria, give the chemical and therefore that bacteria is killed. Or here is a microbe, give chemical, then that microbe is killed. But when it comes to virus, it is so tiny, so small that your chemicals really cannot touch it. So therefore you need to go for vaccination. So that is the third thing. So that's the reason why for the current pandemic they suggest to go for vaccination, because it's a virus and the so-called antibiotics cannot reach or touch the virus. So therefore Parikshit Maharaj is suggesting that if you absorb our consciousness in the material nature as the energy of the Lord, then it lifts our consciousness to pure goodness, and then we can see the Vasudeva Tattva or the expansion of the Lord in His energies or in His creation. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, therefore Parikshit Maharaj is asking the question, please describe this universe or the Bhumandala. And hence we pick up the thread in 5.16.5 that the pan-system Bhumandala resembles a lotus flower and its seven islands resemble the whole of that flower. The length and breadth of the island known as Jambudvipa, which is situated in the middle of the world, are 1 million yojanas, and Jambudvipa is round like the leaf of a lotus flower. So you can see that the lotus flower is shown at the bottom. So the Jambudvipa is like that of a leaf. So like this, it is round. Now when we say Bhumandala, as I said earlier, we should not confuse ourselves with the earth mandala. We are in earth mandala. So there is a big difference between the Bhumandala and the earth mandala. And Bhumandala, sometimes I've seen on the website, it is called Greater Earth Mandala. It is called as Greater Earth Mandala. And this Greater Earth Mandala includes the 14 planetary systems. So one, the first step is that do not confuse ourselves when it says about Bhumandala, the earth. It is talking about the 14 planetary systems, which is the entire universe, but encompassed in Brahman. Then we have the second one, which is, so this Bhumandala, I believe, is of the size is about 4 billion miles in diameter. So this is the size of the universe, 4 billion miles diameter. And then we have the Earth Mandala, which is our small, you can say, Earth globe. So one is the Bhumandala, the other is the Earth Mandala. And what is being described here is Bhumandala, not the Earth Mandala. So, six. In Jambudvipa, there are 9 divisions of land, each with a length of 9,000 yojanas or 72,000 miles. There are 8 mountains that mark the boundaries of these divisions and separate them nicely. So, in Jambudvipa, so in the middle of this Bhumandala, which is like the world. World means concentric circles. So you can see that there is an outer list of petals, then outer ring, then the inner ring, then the innermost ring, and then the central world. So the center of the world is called Jambudvipa. So to understand that Jambudipa, I'll send another picture so that you can see that. Yeah, please pick it up. I'm sending you two pictures. So, in Jambudvipa, there are 9 divisions of land, each with a length of 9,000 yojanas. So, Jambudvipa, in that white picture I sent, you can see there are 9 islands. The names will come up soon. There are 8 mountains that mark the boundaries of the divisions and separate them nicely. So, the boundaries are shown. In the second picture I sent, that is the Nishada, Hemakuta, Himalaya, Ganda, Madana. So you can see that the green flow with the yellow pillar indicating the Golden Sumeru. So therefore that describes what is being said in this verse. In Jambudvipa there are 9 islands, 9 divisions of land, each with a length of 9,000 yojanas. The 9,000 yojanas are clear in the white picture, whereas the divisions of the mountains are clear in the three-dimensional picture of the Golden Meruland. So there are 8 mountains that mark the boundaries of the divisions, separate them nicely. And here the Sanskrit part is given. I try to find out the meaning for this in Sanskrit Thakur, I don't find it. So therefore, yes, Prabhu?
Tell me what stands in picture?
The six purport.
That is the picture, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but I thought let me pick up the word-to-word meaning, but I couldn't find it. So we move to the seventh verse.
So Prabhu, how is picture 1 and 2 related? So picture 3.
In the top view, you are looking at the universe, Jambudvipa. It is from the top you are looking at it. So when you look at it from the top view, you find that the white picture it is describing.
So the world lotus flower is there.
Yeah. And then you are looking from the top view. Yeah, top view. The white is the top view, whereas the green colored one, it is from the front view, but it's showing the three dimensions. Not exactly three dimensions, but the same time three dimensions, because the mountains are being shown. So the vertical, it's like the walls is being shown as mountains, and the central pillar is appearing there. So therefore, it's somewhat three-dimensional figure in the green one. So amidst these divisions, we are now talking verse number 7, or Varshas. Varshas is the sections, or the division, is the Varsha named Ilavata. So the Ilavata division is not clear. In the you can see the green one also, Ilavata, bottom left arrow is shown at Ilavata Varsha. Are you all able to see that? Both in the white and in the green one you can see the Ilavata Varsha, which is situated in the middle of the bowl of the lotus. So the middle portion is the Jambudvipa, and in that Jambudvipa you have the Ilavata Varsha. So if you are looking, either you can look at the green one or you can look at the white one. Either way you find the Ilavata Varsha is described. Whereas in the white one, you can see the dimensions are also given. Whereas in the green one, the dimensions are not given. So with Ilavata Varsha is, within the Ilavata Varsha is Sumeru Mountain. So the Sumeru Mountain is shown in the green, in the white picture, but it is as a circle it is shown, but you can see that in the three-dimensional golden pillar in the three-dimensional picture. is like a, and Sumeru mountain is like the perikar of the lotus like Bhumandala planetary system. The mountain's height is the same as the width of Jambudvipa. So the height of the Sumeru mountain is same as the width of Jambudvipa, or in other words, it is 100,000 yojanas or 800,000 miles. So the mountain height is 800,000 miles. Of that, 16,000 yojanas or 128,000 miles are within the earth, and therefore the mountain's height above the earth is 84,000 yojanas. The mountain's width is 32,000 yojanas at its summit and 16,000 yojanas at its base. So therefore it is like a cylinder, but the bigger base is at the top, and the at the bottom the diameter is less. So it's like this glass. So you can see that at the bottom its diameter is smaller compared to the top diameter. So the pillar, Sumeru mountain is like this glass. But this is made up of stainless steel, but of course it's made up of gold, pure gold. So that description can be seen beautifully in the green, or in this picture, the description is given that is surrounded. So next one. 7, 8. Just north of Ilavaka Vash and going further northward, one after the another, are three mountains named Nila, Sweta and Shringavan. So in the green one also you can see, in both the pictures you can see, but the mountain ridges can be seen more clearly in the green one. That you have the Nila mountain, the Sweta mountain and Shringavan. These mark the borders of the three varshas named Ramyaka. So the names are shown on the right side. The mountain names are appearing on the left side and the land names are appearing on the right side. The land names are Ramyaka, closer to us, then Hiranmaya is in the middle, then Kuru is mentioned here, but here the full name is given, Uttara Kuru Varsha. Separate them one from another. So therefore these mountains separate these Varshas. The width of these mountains is 16,000 miles. So the width of the mountain is 2,000 yojanas or 16,000 miles. Whereas Govardhan, we say, what is the width of Govardhan? About 18 kilometers? On a 22 kilometers the perimeter. So therefore that should be less than, much less than. So compared to that, that itself we feel it takes so much of time for us to do parikrama. And here, it's talking about 16,000 miles width. Lengthwise, they extend east and west to the beaches of the ocean of salt water. Going from south to north, the length of each mountain is 1/10 that of the previous mountain. So because it is a sort of an elliptical shape, so you find that closer to the diameter, it is wider or longer. But as you go to the edge, the size is decreasing. And therefore, by what size it is decreasing? It is decreasing by about 10%, is it? The length of each mountain is 1/10 of the, it is 1/10 of the previous mountain. But however, the height, it continues to be the same. So it appears from, Madhvacharya is quoting from the Brahmanda Purana, it appears from these verses that aside from the sun and moon, there is an invisible planet called Rahu. So Madhvacharya is quoting from Brahmanda Purana, saying that besides moon and sun, there is another planet called Rahu, and the movements of Rahu cause both solar and lunar eclipses. So this is what we observe, solar and lunar eclipses. But the science also sees that, and from the varying perspective also, we see that the eclipses and the calculations are exactly the same. As we find Panchang predicts that this is at this particular time, in this particular region, the eclipse occurs, it is to the last minute, and you find the calculations are perfect. So therefore, one cannot say that the Vedic literature does not understand what is happening in the cosmos. They very well understand. We suggest that the modern expeditions, so Prabhupada is saying, that we suggest that the modern expeditions attempting to reach the moon are mistakenly going to Rahu. So according to Prabhupada, if the so-called astronauts or the spaceships are not really touching the moon, but they are trying to land on Rahu. Next, verse 9. Similarly, south of Ilalatavash and extending from east to west are three great mountains named from north to south. So we can see the bottom side. We have seen the northern side, now we can see the southern side. So the southern side we have Nishada, Hemakuta and Himalaya. So we know Himalaya, we all, if someone is from that part of the region. So these are the three huge mountains which divides the land on the southern side. Each of them is about 10,000 yojanas high, 80,000 miles high. They mark the boundaries of the three varshas name as, so the names are given on the right side, Harivarsha, Kimpursha and Bharatavarsha. So the names are given, how they land Jambudvipa. So this should give us an idea how the Jambudvipa is divided on the northern side and on the southern side. And then in the central, you have that huge Sumeru mountain rising with the height being mentioned in the previous verses. 10. In the same way, west and east of Ilavatavarsh, there are two great mountains named Malyavan and Gandhamardhana. So you can see on the east and west, the two mountains are being shown here. I think better look at the green picture, which is a clear in terms because it's a three-dimensional picture. So you can see that Gandhamardhana is shown and also the Malyavan. Are you all able to see?
It's shown reverse in both of them. Gandhamardhana is shown to the right on the white picture.
Anyway.
I think the white picture is correct.
The white is the right
one. White is the right one. Okay. So the two mountains with are two great mountains named Malyavan and Gandhamardhana respectively. These two mountains which are 2000 yojanas high, that is 16,000 miles high, extend as far as Nila mountain on the north and Nishana in the south. So therefore it's literally it's in between these two mountains, that is Nila mountain on the top north side and Nishada on the southern side. They indicate the borders of Ilavata Varsha and also the Varshas known as Ketumala and Bhadraswa. So you can see the Ketumala to the east of us on the left side and Bhadraswa Varsha onto the right side. Now there are so many mountains, there are so many mountains even on this planet Earth. We do not think that the measurements of all of them have actually been calculated. So therefore there is a possibility that somebody may say that how do you know the measurements? Are they correct? So the Prabhupada is trying to tell us, look, there are so many mountains on this earth itself, and we hardly know their actual measurements. While passing over the mountainous region from Mexico to Caracas, we actually saw so many mountains that we doubt whether their height, length and breadth have been properly measured. So there are so many mountains which are available in the earth planet itself whose measurements are not clearly known or properly known. Therefore, as indicated in Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami, we should not try to comprehend the greater mountainous areas of the universe merely by our calculations. So what is visible to us and what can be seen on this planet itself, the measurements are not known. So therefore, what is in the universe, do not try to speculate. Do not try to comprehend the great mountains in the universe merely by our calculations. So what should we do? Sukadeva Goswami has already stated that such calculations would be very difficult even if one had a duration of life like that of Brahma. So even if you have, what is the duration of Lord Brahma in terms of the solar years? It runs to some 315 trillion years. So even if someone has that length of lifespan, even then the person may not be able to understand what the measurements have been mentioned here. So therefore, we should simply be satisfied with the statements of authorities like Sukadeva Goswami and appreciate how the entire cosmic manifestation has been made possible by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how do we resolve the issue? We simply accept the statements of scripture. We simply accept the statements given by Sukadeva Goswami, because Sukadeva Goswami is not narrating based on his mental speculation, rather he is narrating this description based on what he has heard from his superiors, from his spiritual master. And that, if you go back in the lineage, then you should go back to Lord Krishna. And therefore, whatever is being said by Sukadeva Goswami overrides on what we try to understand from the so-called instruments available in the modern science. So measurements given here in such as the yojana, 10,000 yojanas or 100,000 yojanas should be considered correct because they have been given by Sukadeva Goswami. Our experimental knowledge can neither verify nor disprove the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if somebody says that, well, how are you sure that this is what you are saying is true? Then Prabhupada is giving us the handle. You say, how do you say it's not true? So put a counter question, how do you say that it is not true? So our experimental knowledge can neither verify nor disprove the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. We should simply hear the statements from the authorities. If we can appreciate the extensive energy of the Supreme Person of Godhead, that will benefit us. So by understanding the expansion or the expansiveness of the universe, that should give us an idea the greatness of the Creator. And if you understand the greatness of the Creator and can see the greatness in His creation, then our consciousness is lifted from the state of ignorance to the state of pure goodness. So that's what Parikshit Maharaj says in verse number 3 as a statement. So therefore, this is the reason why we try to study or understand the creation. That it is the Lord's energy, and therefore we should be able to see the Lord in His energy. That lifts our consciousness and that brings us close to reality. So that's what we made opening statement, that the reality is perceived based on our consciousness. That is our underpinning statement that the reality is based on, or the reality is perceived based on our consciousness. So if our consciousness is a mode of ignorance, we realize something else. And if it is in pure goodness, we realize something else. So then how do we see that? It's like, I think, in Nectar of Devotion, I'm not sure where we read, but when we are doing Bhakti Shastri, we said that you need to wear not plain glasses, but if you wear a colored glass, if you wear a blue colored glass, and then you see the world in a particular way. And if you wear a red colored glass, you see the same universe with a different perspective. And if you wear an orange colored glass, you see in a different perspective. And if you wear a pure transparent glass, then you see the actual reality. And wearing a transparent glass like this is considered to be pure goodness. So therefore I can see things as they are. But when the moment I wear that blue colored glass, it means that it's a mode of ignorance, and therefore according everything I see dark bluish, and therefore the actual truth is concealed. Yeah, any question before we move further here? Next verse 11. On the four sides of the great mountain known as Sumeru are four mountains, Mandara. So we can see those mountains. You can just at the bottom of, or at the foundation of Golden Sumeru, the four mountains, small four in the three-dimensional figure, not green one, please look at it. Then it shows the four, three mountains are visible to us, the fourth mountain is behind, so therefore we are not able to see. And the names are given at the left top corner, indicating that the mountains are Mandara, Merumandara, Supashva, Kumada, which are like its beds. The length and height of these mountains are calculated to be 80,000 miles. So the length and the height of these mountains are equal to 80,000 miles. Standing like flags, next verse 12, standing like flagstaffs on the summits of these four mountains, or a mango tree, a rose apple tree, a kadamba tree, and a banyan tree. So on the summit of these four mountains are a mango tree, a rose apple tree, a kadamba tree, and a banyan tree. These trees, or those trees, are calculated to have a width of 800 miles. It is beyond our understanding because we have not seen a tree which is 800 miles here. And a height of 8,800 miles. Their branches also spread to a radius of 1,100 yojana. So those trees are not visible in this picture, but I think I can pick up. Yeah, I'm sending another one. This is coming with the yellow background. So this picture will show you the trees. So if you look at this picture, just now posted the picture. Mm-hmm. Please have a look at the picture. The kadam, it talks about the mango tree. The kadam, on the left side you find the kadamba tree. On the top, the north side, you can see the Satavalsa or the banyan tree. Then on the eastern side, you can see the mango tree. And then on the southern side, you can see the jambu tree or the rose apple. So you can see the, all the trees being shown in this particular picture. Have Have you all seen Gurusiddhi?
Yeah.
You ever seen it? Yeah. So their branches also spread to a radius of 1100 yojanas. So such big trees. 13 to 14. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharata dynasty, between these four mountains are four huge lakes. The water of the first tastes just like milk, the water of the second like honey, and of the third like sugar cane. The fourth lake is filled with pure water. The celestial beings such as Siddhas, Charanas and Gandharvas, who are also known as demigods, enjoy the facility of these lakes. Consequently, they have the natural perfection of mystic yoga, such as the path to become smaller than the smallest or greater than the greatest. There are also four celestial gardens named Nandana, Chaitanatham, Vaipajakam, and Sarvatobhadra. So you can see the lakes is being shown. Chitrarata, is the Chitrarata lake here? Yeah, Chaitrarata lake. Then the milk on the eastern side, and where the 18 yakshas of white bodies become fragrant, that water is shown on the right side, that Mandara or Avanoda. Yeah, if you spend little time, then you find the details are given in this yellow picture. And we find that here we need to struggle in order to get the so-called mystic yoga powers. But if you are on those planetary systems, then you find you are naturally born with those abilities. I think this we find as an example in Ramayana, when Vibhishana comes to Lord Rama and Rama asks Vibhishana, can we fly equally like you are doing to cross the ocean and reach Lanka? Then Vibhishana says, no my dear Lord, this is the gift for us only. For you to cross this place or to cross the ocean, you need to construct a bridge. And that's when they find that, okay, here are two wonderful architects who have the ability, when they touch the stones and drop it in water, then it floats. So therefore what they do, they write on each stone Rama and then give it to others. So when they throw the stones into the ocean, the stones start floating and therefore they are able to cross the ocean. So similarly here also we find there are living entities who have the natural yogic powers of becoming bigger than biggest or greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest, because these are the mystic powers available on those planetary system. 15. The best of the demigods along with their wives, who are like ornaments of heavenly beauty, meet together and enjoy within those gardens. So we can see that the gardens are shown there in the yellow picture. Who are like ornaments of heavenly beauty, meet together and enjoy within those gardens, while their glories are sung by lesser demigods known as Gandharvas. So we find some sort of a hierarchy being shown, that, and in that hierarchy, always we find that the lesser, Prabhupada used the word lesser demigods, they try to worship the superiors. So this is the Vedic culture, that the youngsters worship the seniors, or the children worship their parents, and the parents worship their parents. We respect the elders. This is a typical Vedic culture, and this culture is visible throughout the Bhumandala. So it's not just confined oh, this is archaic old system coming from ancient times or in India. But we find in the description, it is there throughout the universe. 16. On the lower slopes of Mandara mountain is a mango tree named as Devachuta. So you find in the yellow picture, the right side, the mango tree is shown as Devachuta, and it is 1100 yojanas high. The mango tree height is 1100 yojanas. Mangoes as big as mountain peaks and as big as nectar fall from the top of this tree for the enjoyment of the denizens of heaven. So the mangoes are as big as mountain peaks and as sweet as nectar. And when they fall from the tree, it's meant for the local residents to enjoy. In the Vayupurana, there's also a reference to this great tree by learned sages. 17. When all the solid fruits fall from such a height, they break, and the sweet fragmentary juice within them flows out and becomes increasingly more fragrant as it mixes with other scents. That juice cascades from the mountain in waterfalls and becomes a river called Arunoda. So you can see in the picture that Arunoda waterfall is shown on the right side in the yellow picture, which flows pleasantly through the eastern side of the Ilavata. So the trees are big, the mountains are big, the fruits are big, the juice given is also big and sweet. And when we squeeze out some mango juice, we take out in a small vessel. Whereas here, it is a river of mango juice. And if you are attracted by that, don't be attracted. Because it doesn't mean that they don't have the birth and death. They also have the same problem. So Srila Prabhupada said that wherever you go, whether it's in India or America, or any part of the world, or any part of the universe, you have the same Janma with you. So that birth and death is there. So do not be attracted to do this description. But see in this description the beauty of the Lord. How wonderfully and He has created. And then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, why do you want to know this? This is just a fragment of my energy. It's a very tiny portion of my energy. 18. The pious wives of the exorcist act as personal maid service to assist Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva. Because they drink the water of the river Arunoda, so because they drink this water, their bodies become fragrant. And as the air carries away the fragrance, it perfumed the entire atmosphere for 80 miles around. So therefore, here it is said that these exorcists, they function as personal maidservants to Bhavani. And the second statement, that because they drink the water of that river Arunoda, their bodies become fragrant. So we are what we eat. We can see, at least I can see a colleague of mine, although I'm in the mic, I should not say, but she is a beef eater. So when she comes closer to me, I keep moving back because I can smell in her the meat, and especially the beef. I can remember from a friend of mine, he was saying that he works in a place where sometimes in a restaurant they need to crush all the not exactly spoiled, but once it becomes the supposing the date of expiry or just the day of expiry, still whatever meat is left out, they have to crush and then dispose it off. And after crushing all those boxes of meat, when he comes home, his wife gives him milk. He says he can't tolerate because he can see there's a lot of similarity. And he says, Chanda, I can't take that milk, having done that work of crushing the meat. So similarly, here it says that the bodies of the yakshas become frightened because that is what they have taken. Whereas here these people are taking something which is obnoxious, and therefore that's what their frequency is, that's what they give out the smell. 19. Similarly, the fruits of the jambu tree, which are full of pulp and have very small seeds, torn at great height and break to pieces. Those fruits are the size of elephants, and the juice gliding from them becomes a river named Jambuna Nadi. This river falls a distance of 10,000 yojanas from the summit of Meru Mandala to the southern side of Ilavaka and floods the entire line of Ilavaka with juice. We can only imagine how much juice there might be in a fruit that is the size of an elephant but has a very tiny seed. Naturally, the juice of the broken jambu fruits form the waterfalls and floods the entire land of Ilavaka. That juice produces an immense quantity of gold, as will be explained in the next verses. So we stop with the next verse because there's a purport there. By reading these set of verses, we can see the opulence of the Lord's creation. That can be grasped by our tiny brain. But then here, Srila Prabhupada sums up in a way for us to understand how to look at this expansion of Lord's creation for our own spiritual growth. So therefore, the verse number 20 to 21 translation, the mud on both banks of river Jambu Nadi, being moistened by the flowing juice and then dried by the air and the sunshine, produces huge quantities of gold called Jambu Nada. So when the Jambu Nadi, that is the river called Jambu, is moistened by the flowing juice from these fruits and when they are exposed to air and sunshine, it produces gold. So the denizens of heaven use this gold for various kinds of ornaments. Therefore, all the inhabitants of the heavenly planets and their youthful wives are fully decorated with golden ornaments, bangles, belts, and thus they enjoy life. So we find, we see that opulence of gold ornaments possibly, if possible, only when the bride walks in a marriage. But other times, we are in a world where we are scared to wear ornaments. We are scared to wear gold and walk on the streets. We are only inviting problem for ourselves having gold. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, that's one of the reasons why ISKCON temples do not have gold ornaments for the deities. All ISKCON temples have non-gold articles so that the thieves and others are not attracted to the ornaments, rather they should become attracted to the beautiful personality on the altar so that they get purified. So purport, by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the rivers on some planets produce gold on their banks. The poor inhabitants of this earth, so the inhabitants of the earth are very poor, because of their incomplete knowledge, are captivated by a so-called Bhagwan who can produce small quantity of gold. So we have here So I think the person is no more now. but we did have a person on this planet who would say, Om Ushu, that you produce a tiny particle of gold or a gold ring. And it's amazing how even intellectuals are attracted to this. I think recently, if I'm not mistaken, I've seen the Chief Justice of India saying that he never wears any ring, but this is the ring given to him by so and so person, and that gives him protection. I'm so much grateful to that person. However, it is understood that in a higher planetary system, this material world, the mud on the banks of Jambu Nadi mixes with Jambu juice, reacts with sunshine, the air, and automatically produces huge quantities of gold. And this is a dream of the chemists in this world. Somehow, if you can take some material, metal, and add a chemical, so that it can be converted to gold. Thus, the men and women are decorated there by various golden ornaments, and they took very nice. They look very nice. Unfortunately, on Earth, there is such a scarcity of gold that the governments of the world try to keep it in reserve and issue paper currency. Because that currency is not backed up by gold, the paper they distribute as money is worthless. But nevertheless, the people on Earth are very proud of material advancement. So although we deal with paper currency, in fact, these days we deal only with the credit card, not even paper currency. Invisible currency. In modern times, girls and ladies have ornaments made of plastic instead of gold. So this is gold. And plastic utensils are used instead of golden ones. So we find in Yudhishthira's time, golden plate, it was served. And then in Bali Maharaj, it is a pastime, it shows that every day after eating in a gold plate, that is junk, that is thrown away. So that was the appearance at that time. Yet we are very proud of the material wealth. Therefore, the people of this age are described as Mandas Mandamatayo, Manda Bhakyati. We are so unfortunate, but still we feel we are proud. In other words, they are extremely bad and slow to understand the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we do not have the ability to understand the opulence of the Lord. We are so poor in our understanding, so weak in our intellectual capability. They are being described as Sumanda Mataya because their conceptions are so crippled that they accept a bluffer who produces a little gold to be God. So anyone gives us some, anyone does some trick or a magic, we take that person as God. Because they have no gold in their possession, they are actually poverty stricken and therefore they are considered unfortunate. Sometimes these unfortunate people want to be promoted to the heavenly planets to achieve fortunate position as described in this verse. But pure devotees of the Lord are not at all interested in such opulence. So if someone reads these verses, they think, wow, why not I go to those planets, those areas where gold is flowing in the form of a river, and then I can use them as ornament, decorate my body. But what? How do the pure devotees of the Lord look at them? They are not at all interested in such opulence. So this reminds me of a presentation done by the Chief Secretary of Government of India in his first address to UN. I think this dates back to 1950s. And in a statement to UN, he says that poverty is natural. Opulence is considered to be something unnatural for the Indian public. In a sense, he said that the consciousness of the people is so high that they don't care for the so-called wealth. They are not interested because they are more interested on the spiritual part rather than on the material aspect. So therefore, UN talks about the economic development, but Indian public are not interested. So this is dating back 1950s, just 70, 80 years back. But in the 70, 80 years, the world has changed so much that the a country like India is supposed to be leading the rest of the world in scriptural understanding or in spirituality. It is lagging behind in its role. So we find that sometimes people of pure devotion of the Lord are not all into such opulence. Indeed, devotees sometimes compare the color of the gold to that of bright golden stool. It's a very elevated platform. So where a pure devotee considers pure gold as just a bright golden stool. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed devotees not to be allured by golden ornaments and beautifully decorated women. Nathanam na chanam na sundari. A devotee should not be allured by gold, beautiful women, or the prestige of having many followers. So therefore, if someone is allured to the gold, it means that one has to take a long journey in elevating in spiritual consciousness. Still, after chanting, reading through the scriptures, if you are still attracted to the material aspects, so then we should check our sadhana. Indeed, compare Nardhanan, a devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore confidentially prayed, Mama Janmani Janmani Ishware Bhavata Bhaktir Abhiviki Tvai. My Lord, please bless me with your devotional service. I do not want anything else. A devotee may pray to be delivered from this material world, and that is his only aspiration. I nandatam jagintaram balitam mavishame mavamudha kripaya tava pada pankaja kipadhuri satrisam vichintaya. The humble devotee simply prays the Lord, kindly pick me up from the material world, which is full of varieties of material opulence, and keep me under the shelter of your lotus feet. So this is the prayer offered by an devotee. And therefore, Narottama Sankara says, O my Lord, O son of Nanda Maharaj, now you are standing before me with your consort, the daughter of Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani. Kindly accept me as the dust of your lotus feet. Please do not kick me away, for I have no other shelter. So, similarly, Prabodhananda said, the indicator of the position of the demigods who are decorated with golden helmetal ornaments is no better than a phantasmagoria. So, what is phantasmagoria? It is like a dream. It is an imaginary dream. A devotee is never alluded by such opulences. He is simply aspires to become the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. So therefore, we stop here, and summarizing what we have seen is the description of Jambudvip or the Bhumandala, and we should not confuse the Bhumandala with the Bhumi or with the earth planet on which we are living. This Bhumandala represents the entire universe with its 14 planetary systems. And why is Parikshit Maharaj asked this question? Parikshit Maharaj asked this question so that when we understand that the greatness of the creation, or we can understand the greatness of the Creator. So when, and we can, if we are able to see the Lord in His creation, then our consciousness is lifted to pure goodness. And therefore we come back to the starting statement for today's class, that we perceive reality based on our consciousness. So if you can see in this creation the Lord, then we are properly placed, and therefore we can see everywhere the Lord. But if I see that this material world is for my pleasure, then that indicates a person's level of consciousness. With this, I think the class is almost 9 o'clock. If someone has any question or any comment, we take it. Otherwise, that the last Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yes, Mother.
So, what did you say was the diameter of Bhumandala?
Sorry?
The diameter of Bhumandala.
Diameter of the Bhumandala about 4 billion miles.
It can't be, because there is a gap after Bhumandala to the wall of the universe. There is a...
That is totally, if you take the Brahman, that is about 100 crores, I believe.
No, that is 4 billion miles.
The Bhumandala is, once again, you have the Brahman, the shell. So, from one end to the other end of the shell, the dimension is slightly bigger than the Bhumandala as described here. Here it's trying to describe Bhumandala in terms of about 4 billion miles. This is what I have from an ISKCON website. That the Bhumandala is 4 billion mile diameter universe with 14 planetary systems. That is what is given. And the Brahman distance, now you have asked this question, Brahman, the Brahman outer covering of our inner universe is enormous, and according to that, our Brahman is 71 quadrillion, 715 trillion, 715 billion kilometers. If that's your question. The Brahman is, our Brahman is 71 quadrillion, 715 trillion, 715 billion kilometers.
Is that the
in diameter? And having a circumference of almost 242 quadrillion kilometers.
Is that the inner wall of the universe?
That part.
No. Sorry?
Does the universe has many coverings, right? So you're talking about the inner wall, or?
It says Brahman, the Brahman outer covering. You said the Brahman of outer covering of the inner universe. So the universe is within the Brahman, and the Brahman's diameter is this much. Yeah, 71 quadrillion.
Thank you.
Just another quick question.
Yes.
Is that devotees are having a jewelry shop, big shop and branches in South India? So how do we consider that? Is it, maybe we are talking about that's not favorable for, you know, Krishna consciousness. And they have so many employees, they chant and they do. I go by for, you know, you can do a thing. So how do we take that?
Can you repeat?
Yeah, the question asked by Jayaraman Prabhu is, in South India there is a big jewelry shop, mostly from Tamil Nadu, but always from Tamil Nadu, with many branches, with many employees working in those branches, and there are devotees. Now, how do we look at that? We can take the example of Ambarish Prabhu. He is a billionaire. That's what they said, that four, he's a descendant of four, and he's a billionaire. But has those billions come in the way of his devotional activity? So it just depends on the consciousness. Similarly, in the jewelry shop, the person, the owners, they are devotees, and I'm sure their consciousness is not for personal enjoyment, that they are doing because maybe before devotees or their inherited, so they are running the business for livelihood, but their inner consciousness is to serve the Supreme Lord. So we have a pastime, I think one glass manufacturer, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he said he was earning a lot of money, and Prabhupada said, "You're a thief." He said, "Why, Prabhupada, I'm a thief? I'm giving whatever money I'm earning, I'm giving, I think, 50% or some percentage," he says, "is giving to Krishna conscious activities." Then Prabhupada says, "You are a little thief." So similarly, it just depends on how they are utilizing their wealth. Whether they are keeping still Krishna in the center and all their activities are revolving around Krishna being the center, or they have pushed Krishna to the side and they are propelling themselves in the center. It just depends on the consciousness. There are devotees who are millionaires in Melbourne, and there are devotees who are just householders living their life, doing a job, and quite comfortably. And so it depends on somebody who is a millionaire, does not mean that he has moved away from Krishna consciousness. And somebody who is living in just okay is in Krishna consciousness. So either way is possible. In the consciousness of Jesus, it is the same. Therefore, Prabhupada translates bhakti as a devotional activity. Activity is external. So what we perform externally, is it backed by internal consciousness, internal devotion? So therefore, Prabhupada translates bhakti as a devotional activity. External activity, internal consciousness. So, unless you know them personally, you won't know their internal consciousness. I think in Jew temple also, I think if I'm not mistaken, there is a Birla, I think
Birla is there. So, what is that?
He's a millionaire, or a billionaire.
Hello, So in
Deva Chutta mangoes. Today was the prasada from Sarigram.
Is it?